Welcome back to the Big Three, everybody. This week, we are joined by two-time NHRA Top Field champion, the one and only Brittany Force. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here.
Of course.
We're going to talk about what it's like to be the fastest driver in drag racing history, growing up around the most insane race cars on earth, her decision to retire from the sport, and more. What we like to do on the show is kind of just go through your journey as a driver, your life, kind of introduce you to our audience. We've had other drag racers on the show before, but I don't think this is a super NHRA heavy show. So let's start from the beginning. You are somewhat local, not to Inglewood, but to the SoCal area. Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up in Yorba Linda?
Growing up, I born and raised in Yorba Linda. I'm still there. And we had a Pomona racetrack right down the street from me. So that was also home to me. I grew up out at that drag strip watching my dad race. So the reason I got into the sport is because of my dad. My sisters and my mom and I, when we'd be off school for the summer, we'd pack a suitcase and we'd go on the road and just hit racetracks all across the country, following NHRA drag racing, following my dad. And that was kind of, you know, the lifestyle that we grew up around. It was racetracks every other weekend. My dad's crew guys were bigger brothers to us. And it's NHRA drag racing has always been a very family sport. And I definitely feel that way since we grew up in it. But love the sport.
So you would literally just be like, instead of taking a family vacation during the summer, you guys would be living out of a RV or a tour bus or anything like
that? No, we did hotels. Oh, we were in the car a lot. I remember long, long road trips. I remember my sisters and I bringing our coloring books and coloring the whole way there. And I remember being in the car for hours. But again, it was normal to us. We'd stay at hotels. We'd all be crammed in one hotel room. And again, just racetracks all across the country. It was the best childhood ever.
That's super cool. So for those of you who don't know or aren't familiar with NHRA drag racing, Brittany's dad, John Force, an icon of the sport, obviously. And then your sisters who are also competed, Ashley and Courtney as well. And then your eldest sister, she also works in the sport for the team, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
It's very much a family business. The whole family has been involved.
That's very cool.
Do you want me to explain NHRA drag racing for the fans who don't know about it?
Sure.
So NHRA drag racing, it's two cars side by side racing down a 1,000-foot drag strip. It used to be years ago when I, you know, watching my dad as a kid, they used to race to the quarter mile with, you know, explosions and running the cars that far. The cars got too quick. It got too dangerous. So they moved it back. I've always raced 1,000-foot. Again, two cars side by side. I drive the top field car, so they're the long, skinny ones. I have the engine behind me. I've driven a funny car. That's what my sisters drove. The engine is in front of you. It's got that funky, you know, body style and a shorter wheelbase. They're definitely harder to steer. You really got to steer them down the track. I got licensed in one years ago. Whole different animal. Yeah. I like my dragster. That's what I'm comfortable in. If it had to go that direction, I'd definitely have to sit and think about it. But I've always been in dragsters my whole life. I got licensed in a super comp dragster when I was 16 or 17, followed in Ashley's footsteps. She got into super comp first. And, you know, being a younger sister, my little sister and I, Courtney, we always wanted to follow in Ashley's footsteps. Yeah. So we got in right behind her, got licensed in super comp dragsters. They go about 160 miles per hour and did that, competed there for about 3 years, then moved into an A field dragster, competed there for 3 years, and then got licensed in a top field car and kicked off. 2013 was my rookie season.
Very cool. So that was kind of like the pipeline. That did your dad kind of like lay that out, or was that like actually initially just want to do super comp and then you guys followed in that same path?
It's still following my dad's footsteps because that's what, you know, we grew up watching. But again, it was such, when I was a kid, I never thought about being a female in this. There was only a couple females out there. There was very few out there. And it was just my dad's world. It was a male dominated sport. It's what my dad did. And it wasn't until I saw Ashley get into a super comp car, get licensed, where I thought, oh, okay, you know, females can do this too. And she went on and had a great career and was competitive. She won the biggest race of the season in Indy. She did a lot for the few years that she was out there. And that's where I kind of thought, okay, females can do this and be successful. And that's where I followed in her footsteps. And Courtney was right there with me.
I think you guys definitely influenced a lot of girls to enter the sport, because when I did junior dragsters when I was a kid.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and when I, that was probably like early 2000s. I remember while doing the junior drag thing, like Ashley was competing and also being at the drag strip. Our home track was Famoso out in Bakersfield. Okay. But so the drivers that I was afraid of going up against were all girls, you know, because I don't know if this is true scientifically, but it seemed like all the girls had better reaction times. Mm-hmm. And there's one driver in particular that her name is Jenna. I just would just red light against like every time.
Do you remember her last name?
Jenna Thompson, I think.
Oh, okay. No, yeah. That doesn't sound familiar.
Okay. But what did like your friends think of like your family's kind of line of work?
They thought it was crazy. They thought it was nuts. And I never really saw it that way until it was pointed out so much to me, again, by friends, by teachers, by, you know, just other people about what your dad does is absolutely insane. But for me, it was just, we'd sit in the stands and watch my dad race down a racetrack. We'd sit at home on the couch Sunday morning if we weren't at a race, turn the TV on and watch him on TV. And it was very normal to us. Even we got used to the point of him blowing up, catching on fire, crashing into walls, and he'd always climb out. He was always okay. But it's just when you grow up around it, that's all you ever known. That's all I've ever known. So to me, it was very normal. But yes, I did have friends. I did have people that pointed out like, no, that's not normal. Your dad goes how fast he drives a race car. That's crazy. So yes, it was pointed out to me when I was a little bit older.
Mm-hmm. Were there any people like, hey, tell John, I said, hey, are you guys selling any parts or anything like that? Or I don't know.
No, it was more we'd get a lot of the jokes and we still get them to this day. May the force be with you.
Okay. Yeah.
We get that.
That probably got old really fast.
Constantly. And I'll say I still have never seen Star Wars.
Really?
I never got into Star Wars. Wow. No, I never did. So I mean, I heard that line for so long and it wasn't until later someone told me, no, that's like a Star Wars line. But I mean, I remember hearing it as a kid.
Yeah.
And it was like, may the force be with you. It was always anytime we'd say our last name or hand over a credit. My dad would hand over a credit card. That's always what we'd get back.
Wow.
And there was one other one that we'd always get. Now I can't recall. It'll pop in my head later.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was definitely the biggest one.
That's
and you know what?
So
really
funny.
Crazy fun fact. Again, I learned this all later because I don't know anything about Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I guess Star Wars is May 4th.
Yes.
May the 4th be with you. My dad's birthday is May 4th.
Oh, wow.
Which is really
funny
on its own.
Wow. Very interesting. I mean, you don't have to see Star Wars. It's pretty, like, some of them are pretty good. Some of them are pretty bad, but I don't know. Yeah. It's not, you're not missing out necessarily.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'm going to get totally roasted in the comments, but I don't know.
I should sit down and watch it one of these
days.
Maybe
the first one. The first one. The original one.
The original original?
The original.
Like, there's so many, like, first ones. I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah. From like 70, is it 73, 74, 77? A New Hope. That one's, okay. I would say that's worth it. That's worth seeing. And then if you like it, then keep going. If not, then you're good. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So we talked about the journey, the pipeline, super comp into top alcohol, right? And then top fuel. Can you talk about the training process for top fuel? I know you went to the Frank Holly Race School, correct? What was it like the first time you got into a top fuel car? Can you describe what you remember, the emotions, the sensations, just what you felt?
Absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
Completely terrified. And again, it's more of the terrified. It's that fear of the unknown. I drove Super Comp A fuel and, you know, seat time experience. I was very comfortable with that. I knew how to drive the car. And now I'm getting into this whole other animal. And if it sounds different, if it does something weird, if it moves around, how do I know how to react? Because I can't pull from any past experience. So that was what the fear was, not driving the car. It's the fear of this unknown, this new animal that you're driving. And I'll never forget. So I was driving a fuel at the time and we were working on changing the safety of these cars. We wanted to improve. We wanted to build a safer race car. And in the middle of it, let's also do a top fuel car. So it was all under the John Force Racing umbrella. And, you know, they asked me, I was the one in a dragster at the time. My dad asked me, do you want to get into a top fuel car? Just test it, make some runs in it so we could learn from it for building this safer race car. And I said, yeah, sure. Sign me up. I'm always very adventurous. I'll do anything once. Sign me up. Let me try it and see how it goes. And I told him I was very firm on, I still planned, I want to come back to A fuel. Mm-hmm. Like I like driving A fuel. I'm going to school at the time. I was going to school at the time. So I couldn't really be competitive. I wasn't racing enough to really be competitive. And that was my plan. I wanted to come back to that. So I'm like, as long as you're clear, you understand where I'm at, I'll test, we'll make the runs. But I want to go back to A fuel because that's what I really like. And I want to, you know, see if I could further my career there. And then, you know, a lot goes into building a race car, getting a team together, just getting everything, getting to sit a seat formed, fitted for me. A lot goes into it. And so now we're moving. I've said yes. Now we're moving closer to it. And I'm like, holy shit, what did I just get myself into? Like, I have sat in the stands. My favorite spot to sit at a racetrack is at the 1,000 foot, because that is where they are accelerating the quickest. You see them blow past you at 330 miles per hour. And I've sat there and watched top field drivers go by. I've watched my sister go by in a race car at 1,000 feet. And I'm like, how is she driving that thing? Like, she is insane. My dad, the same thing, like absolutely crazy when you're sitting there. It's my favorite spot to sit. And so now we're getting closer to it. And I'm like, holy shit, what did I just sign myself up for? Can't go back now. And I got to at least get in it and give it a chance, even if I completely chicken out. And so we were in West Palm Beach, Florida, driving out to go testing beginning of the season. And I remember there were rain clouds coming in. I'm like, please, Lord, give me rain clouds. Let it rain and just let me have one more day. Just really sit and stew on it. That'll make it much better.
Yeah.
And it didn't rain. Got out to the racetrack, climbed in the thing. Not used to, again, going back to what I know in Super Comp and A-Field, didn't put earplugs in, didn't put a gas mask on.
Oh my
God. Got in the thing and warmed it up. I mean, eyes were pouring, my ears were ringing, like, okay, that's the first wrong move I've made. And and then again, you know, got suited up, got in the car. I'm very much, for me, going through practicing mentally, physically helps me. So sitting in the car and just going through all the motions. I sat in the car for so long, just going through everything I was going to do out on the racetrack, just so when I get up there, I kind of feel like, oh, I've already done it. And pulled up there again. I mean, nervous butterflies, couldn't eat, it's just absolutely terrified. Got in the thing, and you never go all the way down the racetrack. I'm sure people have done it. For me, it was, you know, let's just go 60 feet. 330 feet. Let's work our way down the racetrack. And got in the thing, stepped on the gas, didn't pull my foot out of it. I did that in Super Comp. First time, your reaction is you step on the gas and holy shit, this is too fast. You pull your foot out of it and then you step back on it. So kept my foot in it, you know, drove it out. Whole different animal than an A-fuel car.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh.
Well, what's
so
like the
much
speed difference
faster
at the 1,000 foot between those two cars? Like
A-fuel goes about 265 miles per hour.
Okay.
I hold the speed 343 miles per hour.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a lot different. You, it definitely puts you to the back of your seat. But once I got in it and, you know, worked my way down the track, it slowly became more comfortable with it and was like, okay, I want to get this car to the end. Again, I want to be safe. I want to do everything right. I don't want to hurt myself. Again, it's still this unknown creature that I'm driving. And it was, I spent a whole year testing in the top field car, and it was in Las Vegas. At the end of the season, I made, you know, the first full pass all the way down the drag strip, and I got out on the other end and I was absolutely hooked. I'm like, okay, I know, Dad, everything we talked about me going back to A-Fuel, I've changed my mind in this moment, in this ride right here. This is what I want to do. I love driving this car and I'm not done. Like, I want to keep doing this. I want to pursue this as a career. And that's where it started.
Very cool. The switch was flipped and you were hooked. That's super cool. When you got into the sport, did you feel like your dad's legacy, your family's legacy, did that put any pressure externally, or did you put pressure on yourself because of being part of the Force family?
There's always pressure regardless of what race you're at, what weekend it is, you know, what's on the line, whether it's a getting qualified and your sponsor's there that weekend, getting qualified for the show, but and you know that your boss is standing right behind your race car and it's your last shot to get in the show, or it's first round of race day, or it's a final run, or it's a championship run. There's always some kind of pressure each weekend, something new, something different. Mentally, you just have to work around it. But I never felt the pressure of, you know, holding that name. I saw it more as, I mean, obviously, yes, I want to do well for myself. I wanted, you know, I set goals. I try to, you know, reach those goals. And I'm always trying to, you know, improve my driving weekend after week. And I make mistakes. How do I improve? How do I, you know, get better next weekend? So I'm always looking for ways to improve. But I want to do well for myself. I want to, you know, do well for the team, for John Force Racing, and especially my dad. But more of, no one's going to ever fill my dad's shoes. He's won 16 championships. What he's done is absolutely unreal. And for me, it was more, I saw it as I had this great support system around me. He's hard on me. He's not easy. That's probably one thing people don't know. He's one of the toughest people on me, but I know where it comes from. It comes from a loving place and a place he knows. Sometimes you need to push yourself past your breaking point to get better. And, he's been the best, he's been the best role model for me out there. He's taught me everything in the sport, and lucky to have had his support all through my career.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I think you're a little stronger than me because my dad, he coached my baseball team when I was a kid, and I eventually quit baseball because I think he was being a little too hard on me. But it sounds like
No, he's not easy. Sometimes his words, ooh, they sting, and they're burned in your brain forever. And I'll come back. Actually, I have this running joke with him of things. Sometimes you say things in the heat of the moment, in the heat of battle, and maybe they come out a little rougher than they need to be, or maybe he's having a bad day. So I'm his. You know, I'm right there with him. I'm on the road. We travel together. We work together. We spend too much time together is the problem. We either get along or we can't get along at all. It's definitely both. But we had this joke because I have this in my phone, this notes of things that he said to me. Some are hilarious. Some are funny. Some are mean. And sometimes when we get into an argument or something, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to pull the list out. Don't pull that list out. He gets so upset. I don't want to see what I said to you when I was mad in the heat of the moment. Don't pull that thing out. And he's like, I said that to you. I'm like, yeah, you did. It hurt.
It sounds like because you guys have been traveling together for so long, working together, driving together for so long, like it's fluctuates between like a family relationship, but also like a teammate relationship and also maybe some, not in an employee relationship, but that can be because of that kind of fluctuation, you know, things can be said in the heat of the moment that.
Yes. Yeah. And on both sides, I'm not perfect. I will admit that, but we do have this, I have a great relationship, honestly, to have him out there with me. I wouldn't have it any other way. We are on the road. We live out on the road. We used to do 24 events in our season. We do 20 now. So we've scaled back a little bit. But I mean, off weekends, it's sponsor events. I just was in Chicago yesterday for a monster event. We do Cornwall Tool events, Chevrolet events, Peak events. So off weekends, we're booked. We're traveling. Like we live in and out of airports, in and out of we're out of a suitcase.
Yeah.
The most my season, I'm just living out of a suitcase, and you're in and out of a different hotel every single weekend. Half the time I pull my key card out and I have the wrong hotel key. I'm like, nope, that was from last weekend. This isn't even my door. This is last weekend's 208 was my room last weekend, not this weekend. But, you know, being on the road that much, everyone out on the road kind of becomes your family. So I'm very lucky that I actually have family out there with me. I had my sister out there, Courtney, with me for years when she was still in the seat. And that was some of the best years just to be able to have my sister out there because it is so male dominated. On the road, I'm the only female in John Force Racing under our umbrella. It's all men. And sometimes it's like, I just need a girl to hang out with. So it was nice to have Courtney, but having my dad out there always with me. My mom comes to a lot of the races too. It's great having her, but it's so tough what we do. You know, it's mentally exhausting. It's physically demanding. It's
a traveling road show.
Yes. And to have family out there makes it better, which again, my team, my guys, they're like brothers to me. We are family. Everyone out there does become family.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. We've been shooting a show out on the road, and the longest leg that we were was 3 weeks straight, which is like very new for me, but like, that sounds pretty like,
that's what we
rookie
do.
status. Yeah. But man, it can be really mentally tough, like missing your family, missing your pets, all that kind of stuff. But you do it long enough, it becomes normal. Yeah. Wow. So I wanted to go back to, you know, the pressure. Do you have any sort of like pre-race or pre-run like rituals that you do? Do you listen to any music or anything like that? What do you do to get in the right headspace to get in the car and compete?
I mean, I have a whole training thing before even coming into the weekend that I really work on. But actual race day, right before climbing into the car, it's music for me. Music, it does both. It pumps me up, but it kind of calms me down at the same time. Sometimes I get something about race day. First round race day is far worse than a final round because by the time you're in final round, you're freaking going, you're pumped, you're ready. But something about first round where it's either you get past that first round, there's a chance to win the thing or you're done for the day. Yeah. It's like all your hard work, everything's done first round. It's difficult. But for me, it's music. It pumps me up, but it kind of calms my nerves down a little bit at the same time.
What's on that playlist? Who are we listening to?
Halsey. Okay. Post Malone.
Okay.
I also like Tiesto, that trance, that kind of stuff. Right off the top of my head, who else? Oh, The Weeknd. Weeknd's another big one for me. And then sometimes I'll throw in like Selena Gomez, Britney Spears.
Nice.
Love that too.
Yeah.
It's always changing. But more recently, I'm on not Spotify. It's SoundCloud. So it's like two different songs laid over, and now they've slowed it and turned it into a trance version. Okay, so people are like, nice. What are you listening to right now? I'm like, I can't. It's like three different artists mixed together. Yeah. I don't know how to explain what it is. It's a song I heard on TikTok or something. But definitely music for me. And I'm also very routine. I can't change whatever we're doing on race day.
Yeah.
So I always have my pick of monster for the day. That's in the car. I don't care if it's 100 degrees outside, which most of the time it is. It's so hot wherever we're racing. That stays in the tow car all day. So by final round, the thing's hot.
Yeah.
I'm still drinking it. I don't care. I drink it all day long and we're turning on wind lights. I'm drinking it if it's bubbling hot. I don't care.
Wow. Cool. Yeah. I mean, like having your routine interrupted can be so distracting. Throw you off. Let's see. So if you do have like a bad run or a bad weekend, like what do you do to kind of like not get the yips about it or like move past it?
It's that is really difficult. So our first championship we won in 2017, we were in Vegas. I was in the final round. So now we're in the hunt for this championship. Final round, I red lit. We're done. Game over, driver error. And we're still now have a chance. And I remember my crew chiefs were just distraught over it. Couldn't believe like, okay, does this girl, can she handle the pressure is what it really is. And then we went to Pomona and, you know, we ended up winning the event and won the championship all on the same day. It was just a killer day for us. And really that was so difficult to be able to put that red light behind you. Mm-hmm. You have to put it behind you. You have to forget it. You have to move past it.
It can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, I red lit last time. What if I do it again? Exactly. Oh crap. I'm going to do it again.
If you go up there thinking that, you're already done.
Yeah.
Cause that's exactly what you're going to do. You have to remove that from your head. And it's such a mental game that you play up there that you have to find a way around it. And that's one of the hardest parts for me as a driver. I don't know if it's the female, you know, I don't know if men deal with it as much as I do as a female, but for me, it's, I do my best. I perform my best when my mind is completely clear. I know how to drive the car. I know how to drive the thing. I know what to do. And sometimes you go up there and I'm telling myself, okay, I got to do that. And it's like, no, stop, like turn it off. You have to be on this like autopilot. You have to be in this zone where you're not thinking, because you drive the best when you're not thinking, you're just reacting. Whatever comes your way, you react. And the same with when the tree comes down and you leave off the starting line. And it's so tough to mentally get there sometimes. Sometimes I get there and I'm great. And sometimes I'm overthinking everything. What happened last round? I screwed up last round, or I'm up against this guy who usually, you know, screws with you on the bulb. And are they going to do? It's like, nope. Put all that noise out of your head and focus on what you know how to do. And it's difficult to get there. But yeah, if you do something from the weekend, you have to put it out of your head. You have to move past it.
Yeah. There's that Kevin Costner I forget what it's like, a baseball movie where he's like, release the mechanism, marking the love of the game. Yeah. You just got to get in that like mental state.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, no thoughts, just kind of like in the zone.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
Real quick, want to talk about the being tricky on the bulb. Can you explain to the audience like the mind games that go into like pre-staging and staging and everything goes on at the starting line that to kind of throw your opponent off?
It just depends. It depends on who you're up against, but pretty much everyone's straight laced. They'll go up there and they want to win. They don't want to screw with you. They're not that type of driver. However, there is that type of driver out there. I'm going to call him out right now, Steve Torrance. he's one that, and he'll get out at the other end. Hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, you know, I didn't mean to flick the bulb 12 times. And I'm like, Steve, you've been out here longer than me. Okay, don't come over here and apologize. If that's how you want to play, that's fine. Like, I have no problem with it. If that's how, you know, you drive and that's how you want to compete and that's how you win, there's no rule that you can't do that. And for me, I feel like the second I would do something like that, it'll screw me up because now I'm doing something different than my routine and it'll throw me off. So I'm always slower. I take my time going in. Some people are quick and that could screw with you. Some people
hurry up. Like,
some people can flicker a bulb. Some people could go in deep, whatever it is that they're doing. It can mess with you, or they'll hang you out for a little while, make you sit there and wait and wait and wait.
Burn
you
down.
Then they'll go in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of games you could play. You don't see it too much in Top Fuel. And again, Steve's great. I we've become friends over the years. He's one of my favorite people out there, honestly, but we've had our moments. We've played the game against each other. We've both been in the hunt for a championship. You know, he's won a handful of years and I came out a handful of years, for two championships. And, but it's definitely played out there for me. I just do my normal routine. So it works best for me.
Yeah. It's the same, have that routine pre-run. The routine while staging your car is also very important. You said that people don't play as many mind games in Top Fuel. Is that because those kind of antics don't really give an advantage compared to some of the slower classes?
I believe so. You definitely see it in Pro Stock and other things. I'll sit there and they're just burning each other down. And I'm like, oh my gosh, somebody go in, please. Like, yeah. I can't stand here. I can't imagine what it's like in the car. But I don't know. You just don't. It's never. You see it a little more in Funny Car. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's just the driver, the personalities that you have in those race cars. For me, I don't need to play those. Now, if you really piss me off or something, maybe I might get into it. But again, I feel like the second I do something then cocky like that, yeah, I'm thinking it's going to screw me up. So yeah, it's not going to help me. But yeah, you see it here and there, just not as much in Top Fuel. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. What were some of the craziest or scariest experiences of your career, either behind the wheel or maybe watching someone else run, or just moments where you think back and you're like, that was scary?
It's always terrifying when you're strapped in the car your next run and whoever's in front of you wrecks. I've seen that multiple times, and it's like, okay, mentally just undo that from your brain. So a lot of the time, I mean, since I've seen that so much in the beginning of my career, I typically don't watch when the cars run. I could see it in my peripheral, but I'm not watching. And only for that reason. You see a horrific wreck in front of you. And then, yeah, they'll probably get you out of the car, clean up the track, and then you get back in and you're staring down that same lane where you just witnessed it. So for me, it kind of throws me off. I've had a steering wheel come off at 800 feet.
Oh, my God.
That was terrifying. Luckily, I got the chutes out. The car was going straight. So I was able to had a long shut off, was able to get the car settled down, didn't hit a wall, kept it off a wall.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
I've had
did you
tire.
Have to grab onto the steering wheel?
Oh, no. By the end of the run, the whole thing just came off. I was sitting, I was holding it, wasn't attached any longer. And it was like, oh, I'm screwed now.
Yeah.
If this thing decides to turn or move around, which again, luckily it was right. It was a killer straight run. Didn't go out of the groove and shut the car off. Jeez. And just, Jesus, take the wheel. Pray that it freaking stays straight. And luckily it did.
Wow.
I had a tire blow and it was in Las Vegas. Again, like at that 600 feet. Again, I got lucky. Stayed straight. The second it happened, I knew exactly what was going on. And it was, keep it off the wall. And I did. I wrecked pretty bad in 2018. I don't recall any of it. It knocked me out. I don't have any memory from it. I've watched the video, so it's ingrained in my brain. I know exactly, you know, what went wrong on the run. And it's terrifying to think about that. I mean, it was Pomona. It was first round race day, and the car went up in smoke. I jumped back on it, pedaled the car, and I overdrove it was what I did, and crossed the center line. Luckily, didn't hit anybody in the lane next to me, put it in one wall. And then at that point, you know, I've messed up the front end. It's just hands off. You just got to let the car calm down when it can. And it was back in the other wall sideways. It was terrifying. Luckily, I don't remember any of it. Actually, it's kind of frustrating. I wish I could remember some of it, but I don't have any memory of it. But to go back and when I was in the hospital and watch that thing, I was like, holy cow, I cannot believe I was in that car. It's terrifying to watch. That was probably one of the hardest moments of my career, mm-hmm, was getting back in after that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was like 2 weeks later in Phoenix. I got back in the seat. That was mentally, it taught me how tough mentally I was, because in that moment, obviously it goes through your mind, you know, this sport is dangerous. Again, I knew that when I got in. I watched my dad for years. I knew that when I got in, that it comes with the territory. You know, you can wreck, and eventually you're going to at some point. There's no way you get through your whole career without a mishap, without, you know, just perfect runs. So I always knew that was out there. But when it happened in 2018, I mean, it made you think a little. When you're sitting in the bed, you're beat up, your body hurts, about climbing back in. Are you sure you want to do that? It popped in my head, and it was absolutely put it out of my head, get back in the car one more time, and then make the decision is what it was for me. How can you look at, you know, the career, you know, I'd won a championship the year before, I've won races. How can you pinpoint one bad thing and weigh that against all the rest. So for me, it was, okay, let's go to Phoenix. I have 2 weeks to rest up, heal up, get back in the car, and then make your decision. And the second I got back in the thing, I'm like, we're good to go.
I think it was, we were talking to Antron Brown. I think it was him that had a similar experience.
He had some scary ones. Yeah, I've seen him.
Just getting back into the car was the thing you have to, like, getting strapped in and make, you know, hitting the gas. And then everything kind of melts away. But to get to that point, to get yourself mentally prepared for that, that's the battle. You know, the more we're talking here, the more I'm like, wow, this really is just a mental game. Like, mechanically, obviously, but that's on the team to make sure the car's right. But driver-wise, it's all mental.
It is. Again, like I said, it was one of the most challenging things in my career was getting back in. And
did you like get any advice? Like what were people saying to try to help you through that?
I guess it was more my dad. And again, he was tough on me, but he's like, you got to get back in the car. Because my crew chiefs were great. They said, I mean, I had like bruises down the side of my face, all down the one side of my body. I pulled some things in my neck. So my neck was, but again, the fact that I climbed out in that shape was amazing. But my crew chiefs were like, if you want to sit out Phoenix, like they're looking at the bruises, like down my face and all down my arm. And they're like, how about we just sit this one out? Like sitting out one race isn't going to pull the championship for us. We're still early on in the season. Maybe we sit this one out. But I'm also like my dad, and my dad's already saying, you need to get back in the car. I'm already thinking that before he already told me, because I know the longer I sit on it, the longer I wait, the tougher it's going to be to climb back in that car. It's going to be so much. I'm just going to sit and stew on it and, you know, bring up every worst case scenario. And it's like, I couldn't get in that car fast enough for me. It was get out to Phoenix. I went on Thursday, got strapped into, well, it was my backup car, pulled the belts down. I'm like, oh, it hurts because the belts are pulling right where you're sore. And again, sat in the car and just went through my routine. I mean, over and over, had him put a helmet on, fully suited up, close the canopy down, and just let's go through the routine over and over and over again. I know how to do this. Don't let one bad moment in your career, you know, change, you know, the direction you wanted to go. So pulling up there, again, absolutely terrified. Second I stepped on the gas, went down there, we're like, whoo, I'm good to go.
You're good, back in it.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in like the junction of fear around driving, but also the love of it. I had I've never been in a crash like that, but like I competed at Bonneville this year. It's my second time doing it. And I was really excited to get back in the car and do it. But also I was stressing out for like 2 months beforehand, because the first time I had gone and competed, I saw a bike crash. And then as soon as we got there, a Streamliner had crashed and the driver, Chris Raschke, had passed away. And again, just puts that pressure on you.
Did you see all of it?
We got there like 5 minutes after it happened. But my like family that was there, they saw it happened. And but it's like, we love what we do driving wise, but also it is it's scary. I mean, I was talking to my therapist about it, and he's like, it sounds like you like were terrified of getting into that car. And I was like, yeah, but it's also like the best feeling, you know? Yeah. So I don't know, just like navigating those emotions before driving is so, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, it was.
I think about it all the time.
I definitely say terrified and very fearful the first time I ever climbed in one, when I told you I went testing in West Palm Beach. And again, it's because it's that unknown. After that, it's that same feeling, but it's not terrified, because if you're absolutely terrified to drive the car, maybe you shouldn't. Yeah. But it's more the fear of it's like this pressure. It's the pressure that you're carrying. It's first round, nervous butterflies. You're so nervous. You want to do well. You want to do well for your team. You don't want to let your team down. That, it's like, I wish you could get rid of it. Because when I first got out here racing, that was one thing I asked a lot of drivers. Jack Beckman was one. I said, do the nervous butterflies, do they go away? And he goes, nope, they will be. And I'm like, that was the one thing I prayed that would go away, because you hate that. And it's just, you know, you want to do your best. You don't want to let your team down. But I wish you could get rid of that. But I also feel that it makes you aware. It makes you, when you're driving, now you're more aware. If you were just out there like, I got this, you're the cockiest driver, I'm the best driver out here, I'm not afraid of anything, well, then you probably overdrive and, you know, hurt yourself. But now if you have that little bit of, you know, you're a little more cautious, you have those nervous butterflies, it's because you know that it is a dangerous job. It comes with the territory. You can hurt yourself. You're more cautious, and maybe you don't drive on edge. You drive a little more cautiously. That's how I am, at least.
Who maybe not cockiest drivers out there, but who are some drivers you can think of that do have or just have ice in their veins or don't show any sort of like emotion before a first round or a big round like that? Can you think of any?
There's so many of them that are the way they handle the pressure in first round. It's so different. Justin Ashley, he's one of the best drivers out there. He's in the hunt for a championship right now. He's so calm. He's so mellow. He's so polite. I'll walk over to him and, hi, how are you? Just the nicest guy. And I'm like, does he carry that like same calm presence in his car, or is he completely different? Like once he's suited up and he's in the car. And then there's personalities like Antron, you know, Antron, mm-hmm. he's just wild and he's out there. My dad, oh, he's up and down. He's all over the place. Mm-hmm. You never know what you're going to get with him. It's just different personalities. And I feel like each driver, for me, I've tried to drive both ways where I'm majorly amped up. It doesn't always work for me. I've tried to do it where some drivers, Jack Beckham, always like, stay calm. If you're all wired up, you're going to be twitching in that car. You're not going to drive well. And again, maybe that's what works for this person won't exactly work for another driver in the lane next to you. For me, it's finding this place right in between where, you know, you got that fire and you're amped up, but I'm also like, take a few deep breaths, kind of calm down. It's just right in between, mm-hmm. finding that zone. Yeah. It's difficult to get there, but every driver does it differently. Again, it's more of like their personality and I think what works for them.
I just remember over the course of the conversation, I remembered back in the mid 2000s, you guys had a TV show, right?
Yeah.
what was that like?
So it was Followed My Family.
It's called Driving Force, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Driving Force. It was 2006, 2007, 2008, right? Somewhere in there. And it was Following My Family. My sisters and I were following my dad's footsteps. I was driving Super Comp at the time. Courtney and I were. And then Ashley, my older sister, was driving A-Fuel. And my dad was driving a funny car. And it was just this racing family is what it was. I didn't love it.
No.
It was reality TV back then. So I don't want to say it was scripted, but we did a lot of things as a family. And I'm like, we've never done this in our lives. Why are we going camping? We've never been camping in our lives.
That's amazing.
So for me, it was like, I didn't love it. I feel like you probably saw, I was also a lot younger. You probably saw a lot of my attitude because again, this isn't, I feel like we're faking it and I don't want to fake it. I thought reality was, you know, exactly what you do in your day to day life, but maybe that's boring.
Some producers coming in, hey, we need to get, let's go to dinner. Let's have a dinner.
Yes. Yeah. And they were sneaky about things. They took a video of, and again, they did the same stuff to me, but took a video of my dad screaming the F word at the dog who's barking outside and then made it look like he was screaming at one of us. And I'm like, that is completely not how it happened. They did to me, but they always made it look like my dad and I were fighting, arguing, weren't getting along. And that I'll never forget. It was, we were driving out to Pomona. I was sitting in the back seat because the camera guy was in the front seat. My dad was driving and it was just he picked me up. We drove out to the track together and he asked me about school and my boyfriend and driving. And it was just a great drive with my dad to the racetrack. And they took every part of that drive where I just looked out the window and made it look like I ignored him the entire drive. I didn't, he asked me all these questions and what they put in was me.
Total opposite.
No conversation. Yeah. And I'm like, that looks so terrible on my part. That's not how it went down. So I wasn't a fan of it. Only because they did it in that manner. But
they
again,
misrepresented you. Yeah.
Yes. So again, I know I only watched the one episode and then I never watched him again. So fans still come up and have me sign like the DVD.
Really?
I'm like, oh my God, why is this still out there? But no, I mean, it opened doors to, you know, my family and is probably part of the reason how I was able to, you know, get into a top field car. It opened a lot of doors, opportunities for us. So, you know, as much as I didn't love it.
Yeah. Sorry, you mentioned boyfriend here. I want to know, did your dad ever do anything like judge boyfriends for like not knowing about cars or anything like that? Or
No, really, actually.
That's
always
cool. That's
tried
good.
To be matchmaker. He always tried to set us up with people.
Okay.
So that was wild. When he would go to the team, this is before I was out there driving, he would go out with his guys. They'd go for some beers, you know, after the weekend and a random number would be calling me. I'd answer it and it would be my dad on the other phone. Whose phone? I'm at the bar, Brittany, and I know you're single. There's this really good looking guy. I think he's your type. So here, I want you to meet him and hand the phone over to a stranger. And I'm like, Why are you giving my number out to some guy in a bar? Yeah. I really think he's your type. He's just a nice, nice guy. I'm like, okay, cool. So that happened a handful of times.
Okay.
My dad always, he always tried to play matchmaker for years. It never worked.
Good, I guess. Or I don't know, random men at the bar. And you're married now?
Yes. Yeah. I got married end of last season. So almost a year now. We got married in last year, 2021.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very nice. Yeah, me and my wife got married at the end of last year as well. Oh, it's been good.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
We are a car show, so I got to ask some more car-centric questions. What's your daily driver?
Chevy Silverado.
Silverado, okay. Yeah. What are some of like your favorite cars, some of your dream cars?
I can never be in a sports car. My dad still has a Corvette, and I took it out a couple years ago. I would be pulled over in a second. Mm-hmm. I would get myself into trouble. I just know that I would, which is why I drive on the racetrack where I can drive the way I want to. But if I had a sports car, I would be in trouble within a second. I took that thing out. I had a freaking blast in it. But how I didn't get pulled over, I don't know. Took it right back to a shop, parked it and said, don't give me the keys again. Yeah. That's why I drive a big truck. But I've always been interested. I've never had anything, but like I've always wanted an old school truck, like a Chevrolet 69, like a 69 Chevrolet C10, I think would be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
One of those style truck. I don't know. Never had anything like that.
That's surprising.
Always kind of notice older trucks.
Yeah.
As for cars, now I can't have one.
My first
car was a Mustang.
A Mustang.
I had a Roush Mustang. Again, I got in a lot of trouble with it.
Yeah. A Roush Mustang. That's cool.
I did. Yeah.
Was that because, was that like a manufacturer kind of hookup? Because your dad drove for Ford for a long time, correct?
Yes.
And had the Mustang.
Ford. Yeah. We were with Ford at the time. So, I wanted a truck back then. Again, my sister had an F-150, Ford F-150. That's what I wanted to drive. I wanted to do everything my sister did. And my dad's wanted me, I think he just wanted a Mustang to drive, but pushing me towards a Mustang. And then I got in one and absolutely loved it. It was my first car. It was a beautiful car.
Nice.
Miss it.
Very cool. Do you have some least favorite cars that you've ever driven?
Least favorite cars that I've ever driven?
Yeah. Or just ones you hate seeing on the road?
Yeah. If they drive like a, what could we say on that? What's the, they drive like a jackass. I don't care what kind of car they're in. probably every rental car we have every single weekend. Mm. I don't know what it is, but we never have luck with our rental cars. Half the time we're in like, I'll pull up in a minivan. Mm-hmm. That was the last one in the lot.
Yep.
And we're like, you drive a minivan? I'm like, okay, here we go. you think it would be easy to get a Chevy when you're at landing an airport, big airport, go out to your rental car. It is amazing how there was never one Chevy in the parking lot. And we have to beg, can you find us a Chevy somewhere on this lot? Like, we need a Chevy. It's probably, I would go with that. No, I don't have a car.
No, least favorite car.
No, not really. Do you?
I got to drive a Yugo a couple of years ago, and that was terrible and broke immediately. And also just when it was working, was absolutely terrifying to drive. When you stepped on the brake, it would dart one way. And then if you stepped on the gas, it would dart the other. So
do you remember? Oh, it was Ford. It was Excursion. Those mm-hmm. are the giant
the big ones,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I learned to drive in. When I got my permit, my mom drove an Excursion, which I hated it at the time because I was 15 trying to drive the biggest giant car out there, trying to park the thing. But then after that point, I could drive pretty much anything.
There you go. Wow. Is there a car that you've always wanted to drive, whether it be like a street legal car or maybe even a race car? Is there like a series of racing you've wanted to give a shot?
I did a ride along with Kurt Busch, and I thought I was so excited when we went out there and did that. We were in Charlotte. This was years ago. I thought he was going to kill me.
In an oval car.
Yes.
Okay.
It was Kurt Busch. What year was it? I want to say it was like 2017 or something. We're out in Charlotte. So we're running around the track. I no joke thought we're going to die here. This is absolutely crazy, I'm used to drag racing. I'm used to going straight. I'm not used to turning, but I thought for sure we're going to freaking roll this thing. I was absolutely terrified. And again, maybe it's because I wasn't in control of the thing. I'm now sitting passenger watching him drive. And I'm like, is he trying to show off? Cause he's going to get us hurt. And I mean, he's a professional. He knows exactly what he's doing, but it scared the hell out of me.
And you'd like to try that again, maybe.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
after I got out, I'm like, okay, that was pretty cool. It was one of the coolest things I've done.
That's awesome. So getting back to drag racing and NHRA overall, what aspect of drag racing do you think doesn't get enough attention?
I definitely think we need more eyes on our sport. We need to get more people to the drag races. You can watch it on TV, but it doesn't do it justice. When you're out there at the drag strip and these cars are going 330 miles per hour in less than 4 seconds, it's 11,000 horsepower. Within the first second, I'm pulling 6 to 7 G's. I'm pulling negative 6 G's when I throw my chutes at the top end. I mean, there is nothing like it. It is an extreme sport. I mean, when you're out there, I mean, the ground shakes, your ears are ringing from the sound. It's so unbelievably loud. People, that's the one thing that I never knew how loud it was. And your eyes are burning. I mean, it hits all your senses. And there's nothing like that. When you see, I've never brought anybody out who's never been for the first time and they weren't instantly hooked. Like, I can't believe I've been missing this.
Yeah.
I need to come out. I'll be at the next one. Where are you guys going next?
Yeah. Here's a pitch. We do a history show called Pass Gas. We did an episode on the NHRA. And my pitch for maybe getting some more people to the strip was taking a page from Monster Jam's book and making some of the funny cars look a little more funny.
Yeah.
Instead of they kind of look like cars now, but like, what if some of the funny cars, maybe you have like an alligator's head going down the mm-hmm. track and like a wedge of cheese or a cheese yeah. wheel or something, like make them characters rather than just like cars. What do you think about that?
Yes, that would be cool. But again, we need someone to
you're
back
looking at
it.
Me like, eh.
No, that's the thing. No, that I mean, back back in the 90s when sponsors weren't as difficult as they are now. I mean, my dad had a Superman car. We had the Grinch car. We had all these mm-hmm. fun character cars. I loved it as a kid because I watched the Grinch on TV. I loved that movie. But we did have that back in the earlier years, but that's when, again, sponsors, we had more opportunity, I guess, to have more fun with our race cars out there.
So let's get more fun, I guess, get people in the seats that way. Okay. We are running out of time here a little bit. So I got two more questions for you. What would be your advice for any girls or women who want to have a career in the NHRA?
That's a good question. I have, so many young girls that come up to me at, you know, each weekend, out at the ropes, and they tell me they want to be a race car driver because of me. I've had females come up to me and tell me I inspire them, which to me, that is a win on its own. If I can inspire people throughout my career. But when I have somebody come up and tell me that, and whether they're involved in driving or just in their own career, I had a girl, I don't remember what she did, but she had told me, just seeing you in this male dominated sport and really make a name and carve a path for yourself and be successful surrounded by men. She's like, that's helped me. And I work with all men. And I'm still fighting it out. And I have good days and bad days, but she said that I inspired her for that. And I thought that was so awesome. So for me, it's, I would say advice would be, I mean, if you want to get into racing, start in junior dragsters. That like you did, that's what I would have done. I wish I would have done junior dragsters, but really, if it's something you really want to do, even you got to at least give yourself a chance at it. There's that fear factor, right? We talked about fear earlier, but you got to push past that fear. Even if it's outside your comfort zone, if it's completely against the odds, give yourself a chance. And see if you like it before you say no.
That's great advice. Just great life advice too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've had a great career, 2-time champ, holder of both the quickest pass, so time-wise, and also fastest speed mm-hmm. on the track. A few weeks ago, you announced your retirement from the sport. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through that decision? Did you know before this season started that you would be making that decision?
Yeah, I knew coming into the season. It's kind of been in the back of my mind for a few years, which again, when I got into the sport, we talked about, you know, that there's the danger aspect to it. Also being a female in the sport, I can't do what most men can do out here. If I could still drive and mm-hmm. start a family, I would. Mm-hmm. But that has been my decision. Why I'm stepping out of the seat at the end of this season is to try to start a family with my husband. I got married last year and I'm around my nieces and my nephews a lot and I love them. And we're going to, you know, see if that's what's in God's plan for us. I have no idea, but I'm not saying retirement because I'm not completely closing the door. I don't know what's down the road for me. And I really don't know until I'm there, I guess, if I'll come back.
Because you'll still be involved with
Yes, I still want to be involved. I love I grew up in the sport, so I'm still planning to be out here, be involved in it. But that's a decision for further down the road, but I'm not closing the door to driving. I don't know. Maybe I'll come back, do match races, or maybe I'll come back and get back in the seat full time if that opportunity is still there. And but yeah, it's been a very bittersweet is the best word. It's something that's difficult. It's hard because I've been doing this for the last 13 years. We've won championships. We've set, records and I love what I do. I really do. But I also don't want to miss another opportunity that I don't know. Maybe that's also just as great, different, completely different, but great. So yeah, it's difficult. I have to step out of the seat. I want to step out before the season starts. We're taking care of my team. They're going to stay under the John First Racing umbrella. Great. They're going to stay. That was my biggest thing.
Yeah.
Was getting out of the seat. I want my team to stay together. I want to keep them under John First Racing and I want to see them do well. I know there's still so much more out there. We've accomplished so much together, but I know there's more out there for them and I want to watch them continue to be badass like they always are every single weekend.
Oh yeah.
So
it's very admirable.
Again, it's a tough decision, but it's been on my mind for a while. My team's been known about it since before I made the announcement. My crew chiefs have known about it since last year. So I was talking to them about
my question, since you broke the speed record back in 2022, correct? And then this year broke it two more times, mm-hmm. three more times? Or
I've done it like 12 times.
Oh,
now.
12 times. Oh.
No, maybe it's more than that. Darren, where's Darren? My stat guy, he knows like how many times we've gone 340. But yeah, so I held the ET in, I want to say it was 2019, Reading, Pennsylvania, 362 ET. Mile per hour, we did it at my home track in Pomona. It was 338. Okay. I don't remember what year that was though. Mm-hmm. I think you just said the year.
I think it was 22.
Okay, yeah. So then we've redone it. We've, yes.
Well, yeah.
Keep beating it.
You've been on like an absolute tear this season. Did like your decision to retire from driving for now, like, did that kind of light a fire under the team's ass to like set the car up even more? Was there like kind of like a feeling in the pit where it's like, okay, let's just go all out this season and set the car up, or they're just badasses that way?
It's they're always that way. So whether it is my last season and they know about it, we still have that same intention coming out each weekend. Like, we want to win this race. Yeah. That is our goal. We're chasing down a championship. So we need to qualify top three. We need to get our car down the racetrack every single run to set us up for race day. We want to turn on pro. That's always the goal. That's always how we approach each weekend. But there is something a little different because I've heard my guys say, like, we got to get you another win, but we want an epping, but we got to get you. So it's like they have this heart behind it that's now comes from a different place of, this weekend, we don't know where my road is in driving. Will I return? Will I not? And yeah, they definitely want to make sure we go out on top. And, yeah. And we've had a great season to be able to do those mile per hours. Fingers crossed. I hope we hold those. I don't want to lose those, or I'll definitely want to come back and get back in the car so we could outdo whoever does do it.
All right. Well, that is all the time we had. Brittany Forrest, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was really insightful. A lot of great stories, and I think I learned a lot.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And thank you for listening. This has been The Big Three. We'll see you next time. All right. Bye.